Hello and welcome to Volume 46, Number 28 of Grapevine, your weekly local news magazine. Brought to you by the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association, this edition is published on Friday the 10th of July, 2026. I'm Graham, your presenter, joined this week by Andy and Desney. And in the news this week, a local theatre is put on the at-risk register. Plans for the old gas showroom are refused. And the old library gets a new use. All this plus Grapevine Extra with Andy telling the fascinating story of the beach companies. Firstly, though, a plethora of birthdays, with five during the coming week. So, it's best wishes to Tony Mouton and Patricia Jones for this Saturday the 11th, and to David Harmon for Sunday the 12th, with John Porter celebrating on Monday the 13th, and Sheila Williams raising a glass on Thursday the 16th. We hope that you all have very happy days. Okay, it's time for the first part of the local news, so over to Andy and Desney.
Hello, everybody. A renowned choir is set to perform in a Norfolk church. On Friday, July the 10th at 7:30 p.m, the chorus of St. Cecilia will perform at All Saints Church in Winterton. Conducted by musical director Matthew Hardy, the choir will perform works by Carl Jenkins, John Rutter and Stanford, as well as pieces from popular musicals such as Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, The Greatest Showman and The Pirates of Penzance. Soloists Sam Street, Kathy Chaplin, Matthew Canwell, Jennifer James and Blake Carter, along with the junior chorus, will also perform. The choir will continue its summer concert at St. Peter's Church, Galston, on Thursday, July the 16th, Bradwell Church on Friday, July the 24th, and Horsey Church on Friday, August the 7th, all at 7:30 p.m. Tickets, priced at £10, are available on the door. For bookings and more information, ring 077 86 16 5690. St. Peter's Church is also hosting lunchtime concerts every Friday in July, starting on July the 10th at 12 p.m, featuring soprano Jennifer James, to raise money for the church's organ fund.
Oh, I've got another musical item. Slightly different sort of music. A rock band is set to perform a free outdoor concert. The Uninvited will take to the stage at the Bell in Hemsby from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. on Saturday, July 11th, in what will be their only scheduled appearance at the venue this year. The performance will showcase the band's new singer, Erin Burgess. A spokesman for the band said, "We're so looking forward to this first gig of the year at the Bell. Extra special as it's our only show there this year. We look forward to seeing many faces, old and new. Come and help us make some noise." Fans can expect a set list of rock favourites, including songs by Queen, Pink, Whitesnake, Foo Fighters, Fleetwood Mac, Alanis Morissette, Santa Nancy, as well as their new material. The Uninvited's current lineup features Erin Burgess on lead vocals and acoustic guitar, Mike Barber on lead guitar, Dave Dins Newsome on guitar and harmony vocals, Nick Rift on bass and harmony vocals, Kevin Hunt on drums, and Alex Sharkey on keyboards and harmony vocals. And more details can be found on the band's Facebook page.
And yet more entertainment. St. Nicholas Priory and Charter Academy this time. A movie-themed performance brought music, movement and confidence to the stage in a lively show in Great Yarmouth. Pupils from St Nicholas Priory took part in the end-of-year performing arts performance held in collaboration with Great Yarmouth Charter Academy. The young performers entertained audiences with singing, dancing, acting and poetry in a collaborative effort supported by both schools. Kirsty Wheeler, director of the show, said, "For some of our children, this was their first time on stage. The whole cast were amazing, and it is fantastic to see the children gain more confidence throughout the whole process of rehearsal and performance." High school students helped behind the scenes and during rehearsals. Joe Edwards-Gill, head of performing arts, said, "We were delighted to welcome the courageous performers from St Nicholas Priory. They delivered stirring performances. It is exciting to see the next generation of Great Yarmouth talent taking their first steps onto the stage. St Nicholas Priory and Great Yarmouth Charter Academy have a long-standing partnership."
And away from all this entertainment, a Norfolk Explorer Scout is preparing for a summer challenge by visiting more than 150 Scout Hut and meeting places in 7 days. Maya Yazbek, 15, and from Galston, will travel across Norfolk, Suffolk, Essex, Hertfordshire, Buckinghamshire, Bedfordshire and Cambridgeshire. The feat is part of her efforts to secure her place at the World Scout Jamboree in Poland in 2027. The Jamboree is an international event gathering thousands of young people from all over the world. Maya was chosen to represent Norfolk, and she plans to fundraise for the trip by completing this challenge. She will meet local scout groups, share stories and document her journey on her blog. Maya said, "I wanted to set myself a challenge that really pushed me, especially if I'm asking people to support me. It's definitely outside my comfort zone, but that's what makes it exciting. The Jamboree is such an amazing opportunity, and I want to show I'm willing to work hard to get there." The journey marks the start of her path to Poland. To donate, visit www.gofundme.com and search for the Great British Scout Hut Challenge.
And this is on a totally different subject, Ormsby Sex Parties row. A local homeowner has lost his battle to keep what neighbours described as a sauna of debauchery. The planning inspectorate dismissed the appeal by Chandler Harrod, owner of the house on Thurn Way in Ormsby St Margaret, following a site visit last month. At that visit, nobody was available to grant the inspector access to the property. The bungalow, marketed on Airbnb as a romantic hot tub coastal getaway, has been the subject of complaints for more than a year. Neighbours have alleged that guests' behaviour, including outdoor sex, visible from adjoining gardens, has led to repeated police call-outs. In the back garden, a hot tub and sauna sit on a large area of raised decking, with the structures at the heart of the planning dispute. Mr. Harrod's retrospective bid for planning permission for the structures was refused last year by Great Yarmouth Borough Council. This followed a flood of complaints from neighbours, who not only objected to the unauthorised building work, but also raised serious concerns about the behaviour of guests. They said the elevated decking meant activity in the garden, including what they alleged were outdoor sex sessions involving Airbnb guests, was visible over the garden fence and that they were frequently forced to listen to the accompanying noise. Police have been called to the house on a number of occasions. Last year, the Borough Council said it was considering enforcement action against the property. After the application was refused, Mr. Harrod appealed the decision to the Planning Inspectorate. Last month, however, the inspector attempted to view the site from public land, but concluded that that was insufficient to properly assess it. Having already warned Mr. Harrod in writing that a no-show would result in automatic dismissal under the Town and Country Planning Act 1990, the inspector threw out his appeal. The bungalow is still being listed on Airbnb as a coastal getaway with sauna and hot tub. but Mr. Harrod, who bought the property during the pandemic, could now be forced to remove the sauna and rip out the decking and trellis.
A popular seafront restaurant is on the market and looking for a new owner to take it on. HMS Hinchinbrook in Great Yarmouth has appeared on Rightmove through Paul Hubbard Commercial for £160,000. It is situated directly opposite the beach on Marine Parade, in the heart of Yarmouth's Golden Mile, and has been up for sale for around a month. The website said, "The restaurant is a long-established business with a strong following amongst tourists and locals. It has been recommended for fish and chips and Sunday lunches, and also offers seaside classics, grilled fish, burgers, foot-long hot dogs and much more. The leasehold is being marketed for £160,000 as a turnkey operation. Included in the sale is all furniture, equipment and kitchen fittings. The restaurant has around 5 years left on its current lease and operates on a seasonal basis between February and November, with turnover reported to be between £320,000 and £330,000 a year. There is also said to be significant potential to increase turnover through extended trading and events."
More on planning. Plans have been thrown out to turn a long disused Norfolk museum into flats. DS Property Estates Limited have withdrawn their application to convert the David Hawkins Memorial Charity Museum in Great Yarmouth into 10 self-contained flats. The proposal, submitted to Great Yarmouth Borough Council, planned to create 4 2-bed and 6 1-bed units designed for modern living at 39 to 40 King Street. It proposed to insert roof lights at the front and back, alter the windows, convert the roof space and install an internal staircase, as well as partially demolish and rebuild a single-storey extension at the back. Open-plan kitchen and dining layouts had also been proposed for the apartments, in which most flats would have had separate washing machines, utility spaces and storage. It was planned to have 2 single-bed flats on the ground floor, with the King Street flat accessed from the main stair entrance level. The second floor was proposed to have 3 1-bed flats and 1 2-bed flats. The Grade 2 listed building was last used as the David Hawkins Memorial Charity Museum, which closed in 2016 following the death of its founder. The museum was opened in 2008 by Valerie Hawkins, who set it up in memory of her son David, who died at the age of 18 from undiagnosed pneumonia. It was home to Mrs. Hawkins' collection of trinkets and circus artefacts, which included a revered stamp collection, which helped weave together her family and local history. She amassed more than 1,000 objects, including dolls, trinkets, teddy bears, and royal memorabilia, as a hobby hoarder, some of which were collected by her mother and fairground father, professional clown Van Norman, who appeared at the Hippodrome. The museum was opened up to the public for the final time for 2 special days in September 2017 by Eva Hawkins, Mrs. Hawkins' daughter, after she could not secure funding or volunteers to keep the museum open. During the 1900s, the building was the local gas showroom.
And now, a bit of local politics. A Norfolk MP has appeared on one of the biggest podcasts in the world, outlining how he plans to transform the county from the bottom up. Rupert Lowe featured in the latest episode of the Joe Rogan Experience, which has 21 million subscribers on YouTube and is currently second on the Spotify charts for most listeners. The Great Yarmouth MP told the host he plans to use the foothold he gained in Norfolk by his Great Yarmouth's first councillors to transform local government, before using that as a springboard to take on national government. The podcast is hosted by Joe Rogan, a US comedian, sports commentator and TV host, and Mr. Lowe appeared on the episode, which is currently trending on Apple, during a summer tour of America. On the show, Lowe told Rogan, ultimately, local government has to be controlled from the bottom up, and we started that process. He described how Great Yarmouth First, an offshoot of his national party Restore Britain, won 9 out of 9 seats it contested in May's Norfolk County Council elections. He went on, so at the end of the day, we have to control local government and change it bottom up. Then we have to get control of national government and change it top down. And if we do that, Joe, I think we can release the spirit of the British people, and I think they want it. But they've got to show at the ballot box that's what they want. He described Norfolk and its farming industry to the host, and said the county's fishing fleet had suffered as a result of UK's EU membership. He said, so my constituency is on the east coast in England. It's a coastal constituency. Been very badly served by the post-war elite. So the fishermen in England have been sold down the river too, largely to the European fishermen as a part of the membership of the EU. So Norfolk is a county on the east coast. It's got rich farmland, and farming is my passion. I love farming. I absolutely, it's my hobby and I love it. During the podcast, the Restore Britain leader also revealed he was planning on meeting the trillionaire owner of X and Tesla, Elon Musk. He said Musk had been an incredible support for his party and that he'd been lending his support as Britain is in a bad shape.
Norfolk's recycling centres could start soon, accepting all electrical items again, ending a temporary ban put in place following a major fire. Norfolk County Council has yet to confirm that the ban, which it was forced to introduce after a blaze at the Norfolk depot, which processed many electrical items, is about to be lifted. But posts on Facebook from people who appear to have inside knowledge have suggested the TIPS will accept all items again from Monday, July the 13th. It is understood the County Council intends to make an announcement and provide further details on Thursday, July the 9th, which, as I read this, is today. The partial ban on electrical items has been in place at Norfolk's recycling centres since April. It was introduced after a fire at Wiser Recycling at Thetford, which Norfolk County Council used to process many of the electrical items people take to TIPS. The company then stopped operating after it lost its treatment facility approval. It left County Hall with no legal way to deal with much of the electrical waste which people take to its 19 recycling centres. The council had to apply to a national scheme to be appointed with a new contractor, which took some time to conclude. In the meantime, recycling centres were able to accept washing machines, tumble dryers, dishwashers and cookers. Later, they were also able to take cookers, TVs, monitors and laptops, but not smaller electrical items, batteries, light bulbs and fluorescent tubes. Council officials had urged people to hang on to electrical items in the meantime. They asked people not to fly TIPS items or to put electrical items in with normal rubbish, as those can spark fires. A blaze last month at the Longwater Recycling Centre in Cossie was thought to have been caused by a lithium-ion battery dumped in rubbish. When compacted in bin lorries, the cells in those batteries become damaged, causing fast, fierce and sometimes fatal fires.
I won't be sorry personally to have the recycling open. I've got a dead fridge freezer in my garage and I'm waiting to get rid of the darn thing.
I think a lot of people are in that position.
Yeah, they're probably not as old as my fridge freezer. It is a sadness because it was my beer fridge. However, enough of that. Great Yarmouth Pleasure Beach. One of Norfolk's most popular attractions is welcoming a new addition. The Great Yarmouth Pleasure Beach will open Overplay on July the 16th, bringing a new family adventure to the resort. Situated alongside the park, Overplay boasts giant inflatables, climbing challenges, obstacle courses, rope adventures and interactive play, all inside a 12-metre-high big top tent. Guests can choose between 60-minute or 90-minute sessions, with extra outdoor inflatables available, depending on the weather. Overplay is a separate attraction with its own admission tickets. Visitors can choose to enjoy Overplay independently or combine it with a visit to Great Yarmouth Pleasure Beach. It will be open until September the 6th, with prices starting at £9.50 online for a one-hour session and £13.50 for a two-hour session for children who are taller than 1 metre. Accompanying adults must also pay additional fees. A spokesman for the attraction said, "At Great Yarmouth Pleasure Beach, we're always looking for new ways to make a family day out even more memorable, and we're delighted to be working with Overplay to bring this fantastic new attraction to our visitors."
St George's primary pupils in Great Yarmouth have received sight assessments from Hayden and Gray's opticians. On Thursday, June the 11th, all children from Year 1 to Year 6 were screened, with parents notified if further investigation was required. Opticians no longer visit schools to assess children's eyesight, with few health-related sectors now available as standard. Clear vision is vital for children's learning and development, and issues can often go unnoticed without regular tests. A school spokesperson expressed gratitude to the family-owned opticians for volunteering their time, underlining the positive impact of their service. They stated, "It cannot be overstated how much clear vision has an impact on children's learning and development, and weaknesses can go unrecognised without a sight test." The Hayden and Gray practice is located at 163 King Street, Great Yarmouth. The initiative highlights the importance of regular eye health checks for children.
Back to politics. Norfolk libraries have been banned from putting on pride displays by the new Reform administration at County Hall. The party instructed staff not to create any pride-themed exhibits or stage presentations or events to coincide with Pride Month or local pride parades across the county this summer. Reform says such displays promote a political agenda and says it had brought in the ban to create a genuinely neutral, safe space in Norfolk libraries. The new guidance comes weeks after the party ordered the Progress Pride flag not to be flown from County Hall, a move that upset many staff and is one of the factors that has promoted the so-called Rainbow Revolution. This has involved officials unhappy about the new Reform administration wearing rainbow badges and using rainbow displays on their computer screens, amid rising tensions which seem set to worsen as a result of the new library guidance. The new policy follows criticism from Reform that the Pride movement is politically left-wing and that public bodies should not fund or promote it. They also see it as a vehicle for gender ideology, the heavily contested idea that the gender which someone identifies as should take precedence over their biological sex. Opponents of this ideology says it poses a threat to women and girls by allowing men who identify as women access to female-only spaces like toilets and changing rooms, as well as women's sports. They're also concerned about the impact of the promotion of the ideology could have on vulnerable young people who might question their sexuality or gender. In 2024, Norfolk's main library in the Forum prompted an outcry for hosting a trans display which critics said glorified puberty blockers and bodily mutilation. The exhibition, held to mark Transgender Day of Visibility, included pictures of hypodermic needles for injecting testosterone and sculptures and images of bodies which had had gender reassignment surgery. The then Tory leader at the County Hall, K. Mason Billing ordered the display removed, prompting a backlash from staff. There have also been demonstrations at Norfolk libraries about so-called drag queen story times, when drag queens read stories to children which critics argue are not age-appropriate. Scott Hussey, a senior reform counsellor, said the new rules were introduced after families raised concerns about activities in Norfolk libraries. Public buildings are funded by Norfolk taxpayers, must not be used to advance any political agenda or promote the interests of any campaign group, however well-intentioned, he said. We have heard from residents who feel that it hasn't always been the case, particularly with regard to materials aimed at children. As such, we welcome the steps Norfolk County Council has taken to ensure its library and museum spaces are inclusive and politically neutral for all visitors. But Unison, the trade union which represents council staff, has criticised the new policy, claiming it represented a curb on free speech. Jamie Smith, its Eastern Regional organiser, said, "While Reform is busy clamping down on free speech and fighting culture wars, council staff will get on with providing the best service they can to the people of Norfolk. That includes making libraries genuinely open, welcoming and inclusive spaces for all residents, whatever signal councillors are trying to send." Brian Watkins, leader of the Liberal Democrats at County Hall, added, he was extremely alarmed by Reform's latest move.
A once overgrown industrial yard is being transformed into a memorial woodland by students. The project is taking shape in Great Yarmouth through a partnership between second year land, wildlife and horticulture students from Eastern College and ATI Tank Hire. Together, they are converting a disused part of ATI's industrial site into a 1,100 square metre memorial woodland. The space will become both a biodiversity site and a peaceful area for staff and holds personal significance for the business. Suzanne Lumsden, owner of ATI Tank Hire, said, "My late husband, Charles, was the David Attenborough of the regional hedgerow world. Every roadside hedge was assessed for its species, maintenance, and whether it was wide enough at the base to support ground-nesting birds. This memorial garden will benefit wildlife and provide a tranquil retreat for staff. Working in stages with Eastern College's brilliant students has made this daunting project a reality. Students have already carried out ecological surveys, soil sampling and habitat mapping as part of their first site visit. The hands-on project gives students first-hand experience in professional environmental management."
Well, I seem to have the County Council news today. Norfolk County Council has announced an interim chief executive to take over after the shock resignation of its most senior officer. Kat Hollett, the authority's head of legal services, will step into the role following the departure of Tom McCaig last month. She will fill the post on a temporary basis while the authority seeks a £215,000 a year permanent replacement to drive improvements in productivity of council staff. Ms. Hullett has worked for the council for 5.5 years and is also its monitoring officer, responsible for overseeing standards among councillors. Before arriving at County Hall, she worked at Milton Keynes Council, where she was also head of legal services. She gained a first-class degree in law at the University of Bedfordshire before going on to achieve a postgraduate diploma in local government management at Warwick University's Business School. She also completed a legal practice course at De Montfort University in Leicester. Council leader David Bick said, "I have every confidence that Kat will help us to deliver our agenda in the next few months until we have recruited the permanent position." She takes up the role at a time of upheaval in Norfolk County Council. Mr. McCabe quit his £209,000 role a few weeks after Reform UK took control of the authority from the Conservatives. He had left the job within days of announcing his resignation. Some staff at County Hall are known to be unhappy at changes introduced by the new Reform administration, including the removal of the Ukraine flag from County Hall and a ban on the flying of the Progress Pride one. They're also concerned about the possibility of changes to working practices, including working from home. The job description for Mr. McCabe's replacement makes clear the Reform leadership wants someone with business acumen who will oversee culture change at the authority. The job description states, key aspects of the role include leading culture change at scale and providing strong commercial judgment and business acumen. You will create the conditions for a confident, accountable and productive workforce, embedding a customer-focused, can-do approach to public service delivery. The description outlines the need for a strong emphasis on the importance of organisation culture being the key change agent and the necessity of driving improvements in productivity. The council faces a £36 million funding gap next year, and Mr. Bicker said he wants to see a culture change across the council with increased productivity and income generation. The 36-strong reform group recently announced reviews of the authority's working from home policy and spending on net zero projects. He said, "We need someone who understands the culture and culture change because the council needs it. We have got to find the right individual for that. We're looking for someone with a real breadth of experience." Under Labour's reorganisation plans, the County Council, along with all the others in Norfolk, is due to be axed in 2028 to be replaced by three new unitary authorities. The County Council hopes to challenge that in court, but Mr. Beck said he was confident the job would still have appeal despite the uncertainty. He said, "I'm very confident we will get the right person. It is a big job and we should attract some quality candidates." The council anticipates interviewing candidates in August, with an appointment in early autumn.
Well, part two of this week's news will be coming up in a short while. First, though, a follow-up to last week's mention of the tactile voting machine, the McGonagall Reader. Edward from Vision Norfolk has sent the following definitive details. The McGonagall Reader is a tactile voting device with audio features included so that you can listen to who the candidates are in secret before you cast your vote. It's available for people to use at these upcoming elections so they can cast their vote secretly and independently. The vote takes place at polling stations on Thursday the 16th of July. The McGonagall readers can be booked, depending on whereabouts in the county you are, by contacting either Great Yarmouth Borough Council, who are on email at elections@great-yarmouth.gov.uk, or call on 01493 846 327. That's 01493 846 327. Or for Broadland District Council at elections@southnorfolkandbroadland.gov.uk. That's elections@southnorfolkandbroadland.gov.uk. Or the local council closest to your position. You can book it right up until the day on this occasion, but it's probably best if people do it before, so there's time for it to be arranged. More Vision Norfolk details in Grapevine Extra, along with Andy on the Beach Companies, coming up after the rest of the local news, which follows some items of News in Brief with Andy and Desney.
a local recycling centre was forced to temporarily close after a fire. Caister Recycling Centre in Pump Lane was shut off to the public after a small blaze that broke out just before 12 p.m. on Monday. A spokesman from Norfolk Fire and Rescue said three crews from Great Yarmouth attended and used hose reel jets to extinguish the fire. The site was closed during the afternoon, but Norfolk County Council has confirmed it's back open and is operating as normal. Great Yarmouth Lions Club has opened applications for its community grants. Local groups that make a difference in the lives of children and adults can apply for up to £500 to support their work. The initiative aims to assist groups that focus on well-being, tackling isolation, promoting inclusion, or providing activities that bring people together. The deadline for applications is August the 31st. The club is encouraging groups to apply and continue their positive impact on the local community. Groups interested in applying or wanting more information are encouraged to email the club directly at greatyarmouthlionsclub@gmail.com. And we have a new summer spectacular coming to the historic Hippodrome, promising to be its most vibrant and energetic production yet. From next week, audiences can expect a world of colour and energy as Pulse comes to Great Yarmouth's Hippodrome Circus. It is said to feature dazzling dance performers, family favourite hosts Jack Jay and Johnny Mack, and a heart-stopping display from the famous motorbike Globe Riders. The show promises to be a non-stop journey through the driving beats of culture and will run from July the 8th to September the 13th. It will also feature a water spectacle which transforms the circus ring into a large swimming pool with dancing fountains and performances by synchronised swimmers. A classic car show is returning to the Norfolk Broads next month. Broad's Motor Mania will take place in Stalham on August the 9th at the high school playing field. Visitors can expect a wide selection of classic and retro vehicles, including cars, tractors and trucks, with a wide range of entertainment and food stalls. There'll also be activities for all ages, with inflatables, animals and funfair rides. This year's Broad's Motor Mania will support Great Ormond Street Hospital and Priscilla Bacon Lodge.
And news in brief too, we have a no swim warning was issued at a popular beach following an oil spill in the River Yare. The Environment Agency issued a no bathing warning for Galston at about 7:20 p.m. on Monday. It has since emerged that the oil spill itself occurred in the River Yare near the Britannia Monument in Great Yarmouth. A precautionary no-swim warning was put in place at Galston earlier during the stages of the investigation. This was lifted at 9:15 a.m. on Tuesday, July the 7th. The Environment Agency has confirmed. A major pet retailer is launching its newest store in Norfolk. The opening of Jolly's in Great Yarmouth will be part of the brand's expansion across the UK, with similar launches planned in five other towns and cities. The new store that will open on August the 21st in Pasteur Road will be offering a range of products and services for pet owners, including food, accessories and expert advice. Is the latest step in Jolly's plan to double its store count to more than 250 over the next 5 years, up from its current total of 123. The company reported total revenue growth of 8.7% for the year ending May the 31st, reaching £169 million. A village pub has reopened under new management only days after closing down. The Victoria Inn on Reps Road in Martham shut on Sunday, June the 21st, but the venue, which is owned by pub giant Stonegate, opened again only 5 days later with a new manager. The premises has suffered repeated intermittent closures over the past 4 years. Its previous landlords left the pub, blaming the fun and laughter disappearing from this woke world we live in. A sinkhole has appeared on Galston's main street, disrupting traffic. The crater, located outside the QD store on the High Street, was reported on July the 2nd and has since been cordoned off by Norfolk County Council, who are arranging for repairs to be made. A spokesman for Norfolk County Council said, "We are aware of a sinkhole on Galston High Street, which has been made safe while we investigate the cause." Police are searching for video footage after a moped was stolen and abandoned. The incident happened on Wednesday in Galston when the vehicle was taken from Brasenose Avenue between 7 a.m. and 7:30 a.m. A spokesman for Norfolk Constabulary said, "We are asking for anyone who may have information regarding this incident or relevant doorbell dash cam footage from the area that captures the pale blue moped being ridden during this time frame to get in touch with us." The moped was later found abandoned in Falklands Park, Bradwell. Anyone with information should contact the force. An investigation has been opened into the death of a 41-year-old Galston man who was found dead at his home. Norfolk Coroner's Court heard that Damien Lowne of Worcester Way died from asphyxiation on April the 9th this year. He was formally identified by his uncle, Colin Lowne, who attended his home following his death. An inquest opening heard Mr. Lowne was born in Galston on July the 4th, 1984. His mother confirmed via a statement to a coroner's office that he worked as a carer. No members of his family were present at the hearing, but they have been invited to prepare a pen portrait to help provide a fuller picture of his life at the final hearing. The inquest was adjourned to a full hearing on November the 13th, which is expected to last around 2 hours. Following his death, a fundraising appeal was launched to help pay for his funeral. A message on the GoFundMe page described Mr. Lowne as a loving, gentle, caring, talented legend, and appealed for donations to give him the beautiful, colourful send-off he deserves. More than £1,490 was donated towards the funeral costs in the days after the appeal was launched on April the 11th.
A local holiday park is set to undergo a major transformation after plans were approved. Great Yarmouth Borough Council has given the green light for a major refurbishment of the central facilities and entertainment space at Hopton Holiday Village. The proposal, submitted by Haven Leisure Limited, will see a significant upgrade to the adventure play, with a new climbing wall, bungee trampoline, high nets course, low ropes course, toddler play area and a 9-hole adventure golf course. New leisure and support facilities, including a creative studio, booking hub, ranger station and activity area, paddle course, food and beverage stations will be created, and there will be space for an ice cream truck. The outdoor recreation and seating area will be enhanced, the central facilities building will be extended, and there will be changes made to the entrance area of the swimming complex. Landscaping and demolition works will also take place at the holiday park, which currently accommodates a golf centre, low ropes course, tennis court, sports range, bowling green and a multi-use games area. Anglian Water had objected to the plans, citing concerns over the discharge of surface water and being against any potential connection from the holiday park into their foul network. No comments were raised from people in the area in a public consultation. Planners at the Borough Council said the proposal was acceptable in principle and that no unacceptable visual, residential amenity or environmental impacts have been identified that are not able to be mitigated. Plans have been recommended for approval subject to several conditions, which include details regarding surface water drainage, foul drainage and biodiversity net gain measures.
A bar and grill restaurant has celebrated a successful opening, but has urged the community to keep supporting it. Tipsy Grill has just marked 3 months since opening its doors on the High Street in Galston. It is aiming to bring something new to the town's food and drink scene and is happy with the enthusiasm shown by customers so far. Kiri Mahadevan, joint owner of the business, said, "People need something in the High Street and we've put a lot of money in. We are having really good feedback and 99% of people love the food and the pricing. We've changed it a little bit and there are lots of things coming." Since opening in March, the restaurant has been dishing up its grilled chicken, pizza, pasta and smash burgers to hungry customers. It has been serving a wide variety of drinks in its cocktail bar and recently set up karaoke and DJ nights from 9 p.m. to midnight on Fridays and Saturdays. The bar and restaurant has been busy in the evenings, but the owners would like to see more people stop by for lunch or a drink. Mr. Mahadevan added, "We need Galston to come along and keep supporting it. We're hoping the summer crowd will be good. Our worry is October and November, and that is where we need the locals. We need those regular customers in so we can survive. You don't just have to come in for food. You can come in for a drink and coffee." The bar is showing England's World Cup games on its two 200-inch TVs during the tournament and says it is giving away free shots for every goal England scores. It is set to open a new dark kitchen soon and offer fried chicken takeaways. It also has plans to host a Sri Lankan night to honour the owners and their Sri Lankan heritage.
And back to libraries, a little less contentious this time, I hope. The former Norfolk Library is set for a new lease of life, with a £14.5 million transformation due to be completed this year. More than £3 million has already been spent on Great Yarmouth's former facility in Solhouse Street, with millions more still to come. It's part of a scheme to get the building ready to become the new home for Norfolk County Council's Adult and Children's Services team serving the east of the county. County Hall has about 300 people on that team, but they've been looking for a permanent home since the lease on their former base at Havenbridge House came to an end. Great Yarmouth got a new library as part of the £17 million The Place project, which opened at the town's former Palmer's department store in the marketplace in February last year. So work has been ongoing at the former library to fit it out for the social services staff to move in. A report, which went before the reform-led cabinet last week, detailed how the building had been soft-stripped with some demolition, but officials said that had exposed several significant issues with the fabric and roof. Officers said these findings, along with regulatory requirements, significantly limit our ability to value engineer the expected cost of the project down. But, they said, for our £14.5 million, we are achieving a modern, safe office building which has been developed with input from the service teams. The staff are currently using Greyfriars House, which is owned by Great Yarmouth Borough Council.
Norfolk FA to mediate. The world of football has seen many controversies over the years, from Maradona's hand of God to the Donald Trump red card fiasco at the current World Cup. And now another footballing row has broken out, with a dispute that has already seen a girls' team quit their home village. County football bosses have been asked to step in and mediate after a parish council and a local football club have fallen out over pitch hire fees. Hemsby Parish Council says it has contacted Norfolk FA after a breakdown in relations with Hemsby FC over charges for tournaments held at the council-owned ground in May. The club responded by announcing its under-14s girls team would relocate to Filby for the coming season, citing skyrocketing prices and no support from Hemsby Parish. The council disputes this characterisation They say the girls' team was not charged separately for use of the facilities, their use being included within the football club's annual fee of £800. That covers two pitches, six changing rooms, two referees' rooms, storage, grass cutting, and all utilities, including heating oil, water, and electricity. Hemsby FC is based at the Pavilion on Waters Lane playing field, where its fixtures are played. The council says fees for using the ground have not changed since 2020 and that no increases are currently planned. The dispute appears to centre on separate charges for tournaments held at the ground in May 2026, which the council invoiced at £960 plus VAT per weekend. Minutes of parish council meetings show the club asked the council to reduce the fees to offset expenses the club incurred during a period when the pavilion was unavailable after a fire damaged the building in November last year. The council says the tournament rates have also been unchanged and that the club has at times previously been charged at significantly reduced rates, and it has now contacted Norfolk FA to request mediation between itself and the club, though this has yet to be arranged. Hemsby FC is home to more than 100 junior members and runs a range of mixed and girls' teams.
And apparently dust from a nearby building site is making life horrendous for people living in an expanding local village. Homes on Bluebell Meadow in Bradwell have seen high levels of dust coming from the construction site of the new Homefield Primary School in recent days. The work started this month, and the new school on Chaplin Road is expected to be completed in July 2027. But Councillor John Whedon, who represents the area on Norfolk County Council, said he'd been receiving complaints about dust drift from people living on streets, including Bellamy Drive, Pytle Close, Ellis Drive and Adams Drive. "I'm dealing with countless complaints and in ongoing discussions with officers at County Hall. This is an unacceptable situation," he said. Tons of soil are currently banked up at the site, and a combination of hot, dry weather and wind has seen dust blow into people's gardens and homes. "Monday, July the 6th was horrendous," Mr. Whedon said. "People's linen is ruined. People can't have their windows open, which is not good in this weather." He had a meeting with County Council officers last Tuesday. "There should be a minimal impact. What we can't have is people not being able to open their windows or put linen out. Officers need to get a grip on this, quick," he added. Mr. Whedon said he's raised the matter with Norfolk County Council's Capital Projects team, who have contacted the contractor, R.G. Carter, responsible for the build. They've confirmed that additional dust control measures are in place, including dampening down the site to reduce airborne dust, the councillor says. They will continue to monitor conditions and review further steps. A spokesman for the county council said, "We're sorry that residents have been affected by dust, as R.G. Carter work on our behalf to build a new school for children in the Bradwell area. This has been caused by the recent very dry weather, and our contractor has been using a small bowser to try and prevent the issue. This hasn't made a big enough difference, and an agricultural bowser has now been ordered, which should improve the situation," the spokesperson added. This new school will replace the existing Homefield CAVC primary school on Homefield Avenue and double the number of places available at the existing site. It will be built on land to the north of Chaplin Road, part of the 700-home Bluebell Meadow development, and replace the current 210-space school.
Six dogs and their handlers took part in an unusual training session at Sea Life Great Yarmouth. The visit was organised by Rough Dog Training after the group was kindly given permission to use the attraction as a scent work training venue outside of normal visitor activity. Scent work harnesses a dog's natural ability to detect and locate hidden scents. Holly Mayhew, owner of Rough Dog Training, said, "We're incredibly grateful to the team at Sea Life Great Yarmouth for allowing us this amazing opportunity. It isn't every day you get to train in such a unique setting. The dogs absolutely loved the challenge of working in a completely different environment, and everyone came away smiling. We really appreciate the trust that was placed in us, and we're proud that all of the dogs behaved beautifully throughout the day. The sensory-rich setting of the aquarium offered the dogs a fresh and stimulating environment filled with unfamiliar smells, sounds and sights to explore. This added level of distraction made the scent detection exercises even more rewarding for both dogs and handlers. Throughout the visit, dogs remained on leads and were carefully managed to ensure the welfare of the resident animals was not compromised. The group extended their thanks to the Sea Life team for their hospitality and for supporting responsible, animal-friendly training. Handlers said the day demonstrated the value of scent work as a form of mental enrichment that can build confidence and strengthen the bond between dog and owner. The team at Rough Dog Training hopes the day will encourage more dog owners to discover scent work as a fun, enriching activity that can be enjoyed by dogs of all ages, breeds and abilities."
And I have another dog story here, but I'm afraid this one's rather distressing. A tiny seal pup is at risk of losing its eye after a suspected nasty dog attack. The abandoned harbour seal was found in California, just north of Caister-on-Sea, by a couple who were on holiday. The pair called the Friends of Horsey Seal Rescue Team after spotting the seal in distress. A spokesman for the rescue team said, "The pup was abandoned and suffering a rather nasty eye injury from a suspected dog attack, which may result in the removal of its eye. The pup was transported to RSPCA East Winch for treatment, and the charity says it's keeping everything crossed for this little guy. Seals can cope incredibly well with one eye, or even when blind, by using their super-sensitive whiskers to see underwater," a spokesman for the charity said. "They can track and catch fish by feeling tiny water movements with their super-sensitive whiskers." The rescue team has thanked members of the public who assisted during the rescue on June the 7th and said the pair, only named as Charlie and Lucy, stayed with the seal until the team arrived and kept other members of the public from getting too close. Friends of Horsey Seals is urging beachcombers to give seals plenty of space if they do stumble across any on the Norfolk coast, and to keep dogs on leads.
A night of classic rock is heading to Great Yarmouth. Credence Clearwater Revue will perform their Cosmos Factory Tour at St George's Theatre on August the 1st, promising audiences a night of nostalgia and timeless hits. The show is a tribute to Credence Clearwater Revival, one of America's most influential rock bands, and will feature classic tracks like Proud Mary, Bad Moon Rising, Fortunate Son, and Have You Ever Seen the Rain? Fans can expect to hear not only the band's biggest hits, but also their famous covers, including Susie Q, I Heard It Through the Grapevine, and I Put a Spell on You. Dale Taylor, the band's lead singer and guitarist, said, "We don't just play the songs. We aim to recreate the spirit and atmosphere of a real Credence Clearwater Revival show. It's about celebrating the music, the era, and the incredible connection these songs continue to have with audiences today. Their attention to detail has earned them praise both in the UK and Europe, and they have even performed for guests of CCR frontman John Fogerty at London's O2 Arena. Tickets for the concert are available online at the theatre's website."
A family garden centre is closing down, with its owners blaming the stress and pressure of running a small business. Broadland Nurseries in Ormsby St Michael has announced that it will stop trading. The owners said, we've decided to call it a day. The joy of growing and selling plants has been taken away by the stress and pressure of running a small business in this economy. Ahead of the closure, the business is having a closing down sale, which started on Tuesday, July the 7th. All items, including trees, shrubs, plant, compost and plants, are at a half price. We'll be open every day for the next few weeks, so don't leave it too late, the business said. 3 years ago, the nursery's owners applied for planning permission to change the use of half the site, where they used to grow ornamental conifers, to build a 30-plot campsite and caravan park. At the time, they said, in recent years, it's become increasingly difficult to compete with plants grown on an industrial scale, both in the Fens and from the Netherlands. They later dropped the plans after a cascade of objections from neighbours concerned about the impacts on the local environment. Broadland Nurseries has been owned by the same family since 1912. It was originally established as a small holding and market garden, with greenhouses being erected on part of the site from 1940. All of the nursery's plants are grown in compost, which they mix themselves, and which they described as a secret recipe that was handed down through the family for many years. Avenue Fabrics, which is also located on the site, will continue trading as normal and is not affected by the closure of the plant nursery.
Hob to help vulnerable children. The search to find a location for a new facility to stop children having to be taken into care has ended, with Norfolk County Council set to spend £1.3 million on a scheme in a Broads village. The County Council had been looking for a site where it could create a new hub to provide short-term residential beds and support for children aged 12 to 17 at risk of going into care. The authorities' hunt led to council officers identifying a suitable property in Hoveton. Nick Taylor, the Reform-led council's cabinet minister for commercial assets and revenue generation, has used his delegated powers to agree County Hall will buy the building to create the facility known as a new roads hub. The location of the property is not being revealed, given the nature of its use, but it will be the third facility of its kind in Norfolk. The one in Hoveton, which will cater for up to 25 children, will cover the Great Yarmouth, Broadland and North Norfolk area. There are already hubs in Norwich and Dereham, which provide young people with dedicated support, including help with education, communication and life coaching. Such hubs help young people to remain within a family environment, whether through their own family network or with foster carers. The County Council says, since they were launched in 2021, the hubs have prevented more than 560 children from being taken into care, avoiding costs of almost £69 million. Inspectors recently gave their verdict on Norfolk County Council's Children's Services Department and rated it as outstanding in all areas. That marked a significant turnaround in the County Hall Department in just over a decade, with the department going from inadequate to the top ratings possible. Inspectors from Ofsted, Office for Standards in Education, Children's Services and Skills, had visited the council in February to scrutinise areas such as the welfare of children in care, fostering, adoption and child protection.
Two popular seaside events have been cancelled due to concerns over coastal erosion. Heronsby Lifeboat, which hosts the annual Lifeboat Day and the Herring Festival on the beach, has called off both events for 2026. The events usually turn the beach into a fun family day, with music, games and children's activities such as face painting. Crowds gather to watch lifeboat and lifeguard displays off the shore, giving the supporters a close-up look at how the volunteer crews work in an emergency. In recent years, organisers have also added extras like foam parties and barbecues to help boost donations for the independent Inshore Rescue Service. However, due to fears over the impact of coastal erosion and a lack of space, the events will not take place this year. Hemsby's beach has undergone significant changes in recent years as the sea reshapes the coast. Large sections of the dunes have been stripped away, forcing the closure of parts of the beach and putting homes, roads and tourism businesses at risk. A spokesman for the charity said, "Unfortunately, due to the coastal erosion, we have deemed that it's not safe to host either event with the little amount of space we have remaining. We know that this will come as a real disappointment to many who have enjoyed the regular summer events with the lifeboat hosts. This decision was not taken lightly. The trustees, crew and volunteers are working hard on the relocation of the service, which has to be our main priority this year, so that we can continue to save lives of those who need our help. The organisers thanked supporters for their understanding and said they plan to return next year with a bigger and better event.
A seasonal bus is serving passengers once again this summer. The Wherry 100 bus service, which connects rail passengers arriving at Great Yarmouth Station with the town centre, bus station, seafront attractions and one of the largest area's holiday parks, is running again this year with extended dates. Operated by Great Yarmouth-based Ambassador Travel, the service started on July the 6th and is sponsored by the Wherry Lines Community Rail Partnership. The bus runs through until August the 31st, every 30 minutes, 7 days a week between 9:45 and 6:15 p.m, connecting with rail services arriving and departing Great Yarmouth Station with the seafront, town centre, bus station and Vauxhall Holiday Park. Fares have been held at 2024 prices, with an adult single ticket priced at £2, children aged 5 to 19 at £1.50, aged 4 and under free, with family tickets available and national bus passes also accepted. The Wherry 100 remains the only bus service to call directly outside the railway station. Martin Halliday, Development Officer at the Partnership, said, "We're delighted to work with Ambassador Travel again this year to support the hugely popular Wherry 100 service." Ian Fawkes, Company Director at Ambassador Travel, said, "We're pleased to be operating the Wherry 100 service again and starting 2 weeks earlier than in previous years." Reedham resident Anne Thompson said, "It's wonderful to hear that the Wherry 100 bus will run again this summer and it's starting 2 weeks earlier too. I often use the train to get to Yarmouth, but the long walk from the station means it's difficult to reach the town centre, seafront or the beach, especially with the grandchildren."
Two bird-watching spots in Norfolk have been named among the best RSPB reserves in the UK. Titchwell Marsh and Strumpshaw Fen ranked 14 and 27 in a study by Independent Cottages, making the county part of the UK's top bird-watching highway. The study assessed every RSB reserve across the UK based on the diversity of bird species, presence of globally endangered species, number of hides and viewpoints, facilities, accessibility and family friendliness. In the last year, many rare birds such as a bittern, a flock of black-tailed godwits and four spoonbills have been sighted at Titchwell Marsh near Thornham. Strumpshaw Fen has also been a great spot to see spectacular species such as the hawker dragonfly and a red-listed lapwing bird. Independent Cottages said the two Norfolk sites were more practical for families than better known reserves in Cornwall or Scotland. The east coast stretch from Norfolk to Lincolnshire was also noted to outperform the rest of the UK, not only in terms of species but also in family infrastructure. Both Titchwell Marsh and Strumpshaw Fen were highlighted for their pushchair access, picnic areas and facilities.
A pioneering college has received top recognition for arts and cultural education. East Norfolk Sixth Form College has been awarded the Platinum Arts Mark Award, recognising its outstanding commitment to creativity, student voice and high-quality arts provision. The Platinum Arts Mark Award by Arts Council England places the college among a select group of education providers nationally. Dr. Catherine Richards, principal of East Norfolk Sixth Form College, said, "We're only the second institution in Norfolk to get this award, and we believe the only sixth form college in the country. This accolade demonstrated our commitment to providing inspiring opportunities that allow every young person to express themselves, innovate, and thrive. The award celebrates the college's inclusive arts program, which puts creativity at the centre of the student experience. Students are encouraged to build confidence, think critically, and develop a sense of identity through the arts. The awarding panel praised the college's partnership and community engagement in their feedback. The judges said, "It's very impressive that your centre has been able to work as a broker to increase arts opportunities for young people in Great Yarmouth and Lowestoft, which demonstrates a clear prioritisation of advocacy, leadership and access to arts and culture for others. The running of holiday provision, as well as workshops in a rich variety of different arts disciplines, is exemplary of a culture of enrichment which is designed to expand access and provision for all learners. Students have taken part in public performances and exhibitions, bringing their creativity to audiences in the wider community." The panel also commended the college's perseverance in the face of funding and resource pressures.
A theatre closed to the public for the last 10 years has been listed as at risk for the second time. The Regent Theatre, nestled in the heart of Great Yarmouth, has been placed on the Theatres at Risk register by the Theatres Trust, which identifies venues in danger of closure, redevelopment or falling into serious disrepair. The Edwardian Gem has been closed since 2016 when it was purchased by Global Miracle Gospel Ministries, a London-based church group, for £215,000. The group has used the building primarily for Sunday church services. The theatre is one of 39 across the UK that have been placed on the at-risk register amid warnings that they face ongoing threat from deterioration and lack of use. Joshua McTaggart, Chief Executive of the Theatres Trust, said, "Theatres Trust urges theatre owners, operators and local authorities to reach out to us before concerns become crises." Earlier this year, it was revealed that a section of the Regent could potentially reopen as a food bank, though no planning application has been submitted. Parts of the building have reportedly been restored, including the roof, flooring, air conditioning and central heating, but the theatre remains shut to the general public. The building served as a theatre and cinema from 1914 to 1982, and welcomed acts including Ken Dodd and Roy Hudd onto the stage. A scheme to turn the theatre into a multiplex in 1982 did not come to fruition, and a new owner was sought. A campaign by the Great Yarmouth Mercury resulted in the building being Grade 2 listed, meaning it could not be altered in any way without planning consent. Mecca Building stepped in and transformed it into a bingo hall, which closed in December 2015, before it briefly reopened as a nightclub until its doors shut again in 2016. The theatre was first placed on the at-risk register in 2022.
Police have arrested 23 people in a targeted operation to tackle organised immigration crime. The arrests were made as part of Operation Lockstream, a national scheme led by the National Police Chief Council, focused on disrupting cross-border offending and related criminal activity. The operation took place from June the 15th to June the 20th and involved coordinated action across Norfolk and Suffolk. In Norfolk, the six-day crackdown led to arrests for a range of immigration offences, including illegal entry, overstaying visas, suspected illegal working, and immigration absconding. Police also detained individuals on suspicion of handling stolen goods and going equipped for theft. Three people were charged and remanded in custody in connection with serious drug offences, including possession with intent to supply. Two others were charged and remanded for multiple shop theft offences. Officers seized more than 100 grams of cocaine, valued at approximately £10,000, and around 10 kilograms of cannabis, estimated to be worth £100,000. They also recovered £1,000 in suspected criminal cash, a fraudulent driving licence, and several vehicles. One of the busiest days of the operation led to 8 arrests for offences including significant drug-related activity and immigration breaches. Sergeant Josh Preston said, "Operation Lockstream provided an important opportunity to work closely with immigration enforcement and partner agencies to target organised immigration crime and the associated criminality that can impact our communities." The week of action resulted in a number of significant arrests, charges and drug seizures, while also allowing us to identify and disrupt individuals involved in immigration offending and wider criminal activity. We would like to thank all officers, staff and partner agencies who contributed to the operation and helped deliver these positive results. Operation Lockstream is a national initiative designed to tackle organised immigration crime and linked offending through joint enforcement between police forces and partner agencies.
Welcome to Grapevine Extra. This week, featuring the fascinating history of the area's beach companies. That is, after I've given you the latest Vision Norfolk news. Right, some more Vision Norfolk bits. Edward Bates has written with the following. We're looking to see if anyone is interested in macrame workshops. We have 2 dates booked, August the 12th and September the 23rd, between 1 and 4 p.m. Spaces are extremely limited, but if you're interested, could you please let us know as soon as possible so we can secure your space, as it will be on a first-come, first-served basis. If you're interested, please phone the Hub on 01493 743 973. That's 01493 745 973. Or email catherine.bond@visionnorfolk.org.uk. Catherine is spelled with a C, and Vision Norfolk is all one word. catherine.bond@visionnorfolk.org.uk. Now, a message from Mark Smith from the Norwich Hub. Hello, Leisure Group members and colleagues. Just to let you know that we have some places available on our sailing minibus next week on Thursday the 16th of July, and would welcome anyone who would like to come and experience sailing on Barton Broad. Further to this, the full details and list of sailing dates for 2026 with the Nancy Oldfield Trust are as follows. The minibus leaves the Bradbury Activity Centre in Norwich at 12:30 p.m. and returns at approximately 5 p.m. Cost is £25 for sailing, with payment to Nancy Oldfield Trust, with no charge for the minibus. Please note, a bursary scheme is available towards some of the cost if you find it difficult to meet the full cost. All dates are Thursdays, and they are 30th of July, 13th of August, 27th of August, 10th of September, 24th of September, the 8th of October, and the 22nd of October. For more details and to book, call Mark or Helen on 01603 573 000, extension 341 or 342, or email mark.smith@visionnorfolk.org.uk. Please note that places are limited and must be pre-booked. So that's 01603 573 000, extension 341 or 342, or email mark.smith@visionnorfolk.org.uk.
For the following piece, we're indebted to Hayden Brown of the Facebook page Norfolk Tales and Myths for granting us permission to use this in a broadcast. And this piece concerns the East Anglian 18th century beach companies, which of course are the forerunner of the RNLI. And it seems many people have almost forgotten about the beachmen of East Anglia and the companies they formed. For more than 100 years in the 18th and early 19th centuries, they were a common feature of most seafaring communities. These groups of local sailors and fishermen did important and often dangerous work, through which they saved many hundreds of lives. All were volunteers, though it's fair to add that the work could be fairly profitable. Money obtained from salvage rights or from ships' masters paying to avoid a wreck, even from individual passengers wishing to make sure of being rescued, was shared out among members of the company. That included those who stayed ashore, helping to launch and recover the boats, or get survivors ashore to allow a boat to return to a ship in distress. Today, any signs that remain of this important part of our maritime past are often attributed to other better-known groups, or ignored altogether. If you go to Albury in Suffolk, you will see, for example, two separate watchtowers built by rival companies, for it was intensely competitive business, and ships' masters often tried to negotiate the best deal before agreed to being rescued. Really, we've got to start with the why and wherefores, and we have to start with geography and trade. In the 18th and early 19th century, roads were primitive, and the canals and railways only at their beginning. Transporting goods meant using either slow, ponderous wagons or lines of pack horses. As a result, the bulk of heavy items were carried by thousands of small wooden sailing ships plying their trade all around our coasts. And these coastal vessels were specially constructed for the purpose. They were small to allow entry to the greatest number of harbours, and many were flat-bottomed, so they could be beached for loading and unloading in places where no harbour existed. In Cromer, for example, coal ships were grounded on the beach as the tide ebbed, the desired amount of coal was unloaded, and the ship reflected on the next tide. East Anglian coasts are edged by a complex pattern of sands and shoals, which make safe navigation a challenge even today. These are seas with strong currents and tides, prone to terrific winter gales, often easterlies blowing onshore, and consequently storm surges. For ships sailing north or south, there is one long lee shore, broken only by the vast estuary we know as the Wash. That too is a major shipping hazard. If a sailing ship were driven into the Wash on an easterly gale, there was no way out. It's also a mass of shifting sandbanks and shoals. The only hope was to drop anchor and hope the anchor cables would hold until the storm died and the ship could be worked out to sea again. All too often they did not. The East Coast was also especially busy with ships carrying coal from Newcastle, timber and iron from Scandinavia and the Baltic, and manufactured goods to and from almost everywhere, but especially London. Such a combination of busy sea lanes and treacherous conditions inevitably produced a steady procession of wrecks, some from mistakes made by captains and crews, some from poorly maintained vessels, and some from the sheer force of the wind and waves. When the gales blew at storm or hurricane force, visibility was zero, and the seas a confused tumult of towering waves. It little wonder scores of vessels ran aground on the shoals, their sails shredded, their masts broken, and the water pouring in faster than any pumps could clear it. In November 1807, 144 bodies were washed ashore along the coast after a single gale. In 1836, it was reported that 23 vessels had been driven onto Yarmouth Beach in one November storm. If your vessel was taking in water or had lost its sails, dragged its anchors or developed a dangerous list from shifted cargo, you had little option but to try and put the ship ashore wherever you could. Into this mix of profit and danger came the beachmen. The North Sea fisheries were mostly seasonal. Herring was the main catch, taken from small drifters, but that was almost entirely in the hands of Scottish crews. Early autumn, the fish migrated southwards to feed off the sandbanks and shoals that trapped so many fish. The Scottish boats followed the herring southward as far as Great Yarmouth, where the season ended. Local fisheries were generally small, with boats heading out into the North Sea in search of cod, haddock and turbot, or staying close to shore and putting down pots for crabs and lobsters. None of this work was likely to produce a large profit, so local men needed additional work to supplement their income. They found it in serving the needs of passing commercial shipping. They took out stores or pilots, acted as pilots themselves, searched for the lost anchors, which were lost in every gale, and helped tired crews work their ships against the weather and tides. Naturally, they also took advantage of the salvage opportunities produced by every storm. This was heavy work, unsuitable for individuals or very small groups, so the beach companies arose to allow larger groups of locals to combine for the salvage of ships and cargoes. Tough, resourceful men saw an opportunity and took it. During their heyday, they provided an essential service to a vital transport network. They may have looked to make money through their actions, but they were also first and foremost seafarers. They were not going to stay safe ashore when their fellow seafarers were being wrecked and drowned, not if they could do something to try and save them. Like today's volunteer lifeboatmen, the beach companies went out in the most dreadful conditions and risked their lives to save others. Instances did occur when the lack of a chance of profit caused some beachmen to hang back, but they were rare. Besides, communication between ship and shore was so primitive then, beach companies usually had to send a boat out first to a ship in trouble to know whether anything could be salvaged, or whether they could only seek to take off those still alive, which more than once included the ship's cat. From the middle of the 19th century onwards, the slow collapse of both the herring fishery and the local fisheries through overfishing left insufficient skilled seamen with knowledge of local conditions to supply the beach companies, or even the lifeboats, with crews. As cargo ships grew larger, salvage opportunities for the beachmen in their wooden yawls fell away. Companies amalgamated to make the best of limited manpower, but nothing could help them compete with harbour and railway companies with deep pockets and steam tugs with time on their hands. Some beach companies even turned to giving pleasure trips to the growing numbers of holidaymakers, but the end was in sight. The last yawls were built at the very start of the 20th century, and the last beach company was wound up in the late 1920s. The beachmen played an important part in the modest beginnings of today's salvage business, helping to save many valuable ships and cargoes. life-saving boats and crews didn't begin with the establishment of a volunteer-funded lifeboat organisation like the RNLI. For more than a century, the beach companies either supplied a lifeboat service in the many places where no voluntary one existed, or supplemented those that did. They surely deserve to be remembered for their bravery and achievements, as well as the important part they played in sustaining national trade. So, the next time you put your hand in your pocket to support your local lifeboat, or spend a summer day on an East Coast beach, remember those Georgian and Victorians who risked all to save ships and souls in the worst of sea and weather conditions, relying on little beyond their own skill and muscles.
Well, that's it for this week. Grapevine is copyright 2026 of the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accept responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. Next week, your newsreaders will be Andrew and Alison. So, we hope that you'll join us for then for much more of your local news. But in the meantime, here's hoping that you stay safe, well and cool. And from all your friends at Grapevine, enjoy your week, and it's bye for now.